If you have a Bible, it'd be good to turn to Isaiah chapter 65, verses 17 through to 25. If you have one of the Red Church Bibles, it's page 752. If you have another Bible, you're on your own. Behold, I will create new heavens and a new earth. The former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind. But be glad and rejoice forever in what I will create. For I will create Jerusalem to be a delight and its people a joy. I will rejoice over Jerusalem and take delight in my people. The sound of weeping and of crying will be heard in it no more. Never again will there be in it an infant who lives but a few days, or an old man who does not live out his years. He who dies at 100 will be thought a mere youth. He who fails to reach 100 will be considered accursed. They will build houses and dwell in them. They will plant vineyards and eat their fruit. No longer will they build houses and others live in them, or plant and others eat. For as the days of a tree, so will be the days of my people. My chosen ones will long enjoy the works of their hands. They will not toil in vain or bear children doomed to misfortune. For they will be a people blessed by the Lord, they and their descendants with them. Before they call, I will answer. While they are still speaking, I will hear them. The wolf and the lamb will feed together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox, but dust will be the serpent's food. They will neither harm nor destroy on all of my holy mountain, says the Lord. Let's pray for God's help before we begin. So, it's the last Sunday of 2013. I wonder how you're feeling about the year that's just gone. Has it been a good year or a bad year? Have you struggled or have you flourished? Or maybe a bit of both? And how about 2014, eh? If you have any New Year's resolutions, I'd love to hear them. What are your hopes and dreams for next year? My personal ambitions are to get a first in my first year at uni, to find a house. Unfortunately, at the moment, I'm living with six guys and I'm the smallest, so there'll be a lot of food and it will smell. I'd also quite like to see the England cricket team reverse their fortunes. Yes, that's a personal ambition of mine. But I wonder what your ambitions are. Is it going to be a better year for you? Will you get involved in Passion for Life? Will you get involved in a new ministry? Are you going to get a new job? Are you going to get married? Are the children going to be moving schools? Pick up a new hobby, anything? Of course, we have no way of knowing what 2014 is really going to be like for us. Life is up and down. There's no real certainty, is there? It's entirely possible that the next year might be filled with joy, but it also might be filled with suffering. Our future on this earth is incredibly uncertain. Let's head back to the time of Isaiah. This prophecy was written to a group of Israelites hundreds of years after Isaiah actually prophesied, who were just returning to the ruins of a city. They'd been in captivity in a faraway land, and they were coming back and rebuilding the city of Jerusalem. And it's a time of reflection for them on the past and on the future. All this bad stuff has happened to us. We've had a rubbish 2013, although clearly it's not 2013. But will the future for us, the nation of Israel, be good? Will it be bad? And then comes this prophecy from Isaiah, the very words of God to his people, telling them what their future will be like as his people. And we're going to work through these words of God and see what hope can be seen for us. A hope which isn't confined to the what-ifs of a new year, but a solid hope for the distant future which God has revealed to us. So if you're a note taker, the first point is, there will be a perfect new creation. And I apologize, it's not a PowerPoint. There will be a perfect new creation. I hope this doesn't seem too obvious to us, but I feel that sometimes, even as Christians, we get stuck with this idea that heaven, when we die and we go up to the clouds and when Jesus returns, it's going to be this kind of place with clouds where we're all going to be playing harps. We're all going to magically figure out how to play the harp just like that. And we're all going to be wearing white nighties. And
just a bit boring. Kind of this Hollywood idea of heaven just is a bit rubbish. We'll all look funny and kind of somehow float on the clouds. It doesn't, quite frankly, seem that appealing. However, in our passage in Isaiah, we see that there's going to be a new creation for God's people. In verse 17, he says, I will create new heavens and a new earth. It's not some new city in the clouds, but it's earth. In some way, this new creation can be described in terms of what we experience now. It's going to be physical. You can go up to someone and poke them in the chest and you won't go right through them. You're kind of standing on ground and it's going to be something physical. It's going to be great. But what kind of type of earth is it going to be? There's an old joke and I'm going to get into trouble for this. In the beginning, God said to the man, perfect wives are to be found in every corner of the earth. And then God made the earth round. And he laughed and he laughed and laughed. Now, quickly, you can change husbands and wives around in that joke. So, or let's pick something. Perfect sandwiches are to be found in every corner of the earth. Or the perfect job or perfect magazine or perfect TV show. And on this earth, perfection is not something we experience. That's the point of that silly joke. Perfection on this earth is not something that we experience. And this new creation is going to be perfect. So it's going to be a bit of a stretch for us to kind of get from our experience here to this perfect new creation. But we'll give it a go. So we'll start in verse 17. One of the reasons that this new creation will be perfect is because the former things will not be remembered, nor will they come to mind. The former things, all the sin, all the disappointment, all the pain, all the suffering, all that is wrong with this world is going to be completely forgotten about when this new creation comes. We won't be able to remember any of it. So all of the pain and the suffering that you feel, it's not even going to be a distant memory in this new creation. Verse 19, the sound of weeping and crying will be heard in it no more. But there was pain and suffering and death and all the things that as human beings we hate. But in this new creation, no. There's going to be none of that. This new creation is going to be completely devoid of anything wrong. I just want to stop on verse 20. Because to human beings, it's easy to say there's going to be no more pain and suffering and death, and for us not quite to get it. But verse 20, there's going to be no more death. The worst human experience is death. It is completely unnatural, and it's painful, and it's unfair. Particularly when someone is taken before their time. And I know that some people will have awful experiences concerning death. Death of a loved one, death of a friend. And I think it's really important to know that when talking about this new creation, God hates death even more than we do. That's why he deals with it in this new creation. Never again is someone going to die at all. There's this little picture. He who dies at 100 will be thought a mere youth. He who fails to reach 100 will be considered accursed. Well, even for us today in the modern world with our brilliant NHS, living to 100 is rare. But the picture here is that if someone didn't live to 100, that would just be completely unusual. They'd just be like, well, you were rubbish and you're under a curse because you haven't lived to this ripe old age. And this is kind of, this is a symbol. It's not saying that actually once you reach 100, it's fair game. It's saying, no, you're never going to die. Life will be so plentiful and so abundant and so present in this new creation that, quite frankly, the idea of living to 100 is not ridiculous. It's just normal. Life is going to be so present that there's going to be no more death. And that's important to remember. Death is painful. In the new creation, God is going to deal with that. And next we see images of perfect justice and perfect reward. There's going to be no injustice in the new creation. Sounds like a bit of a pointless example, but group work in schools was simply unfair. If you're a teacher, don't set students group work because you get one kid doing the work and four kids getting the credit. But just, there's going to be none of that. God's not going to set group work. The small business owner is no longer going to have their money taken from them by tax and by banks. The mum who works and works for her family but still struggles, she's not going to struggle anymore. There's going to be no more stealing your hard-earned money. There's going to be no more misfortune. The bottom line of the new creation is there's no more injustice. There's never going to be a frustration when someone takes what isn't ours. Look at that. They will build houses and dwell in them. You're going to get to live in the house you build. They'll plant vineyards and eat their fruit. I find this little verse brilliant. They will plant vineyards and eat their fruit. Because it's not just saying you'll work in the fields and you'll get to take the very bare necessities of life home with you to bake bread. No, you get to take the luxuries home. Even the luxuries that you earn and work for will not be taken from you in the new creation. For Isaiah's listeners, the Israelites, they had a long history of oppression and injustice. All you need to do is go back to Judges and see cycle after cycle of oppression and destruction by their enemies, taking what they earned. It's kind of a history cycle for Israel. There are always enemies taking from them, and there's injustice, there's war, there's fighting. And now, for these people returning from exile, God is saying, this cycle is going to stop. This injustice that you've experienced as a nation, just pretty much throughout your entire existence, is going to go. And finally, in verse 25, we have these perfect images of peace and security. The wolf and the lamb will feed together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. But dust will be the serpent's food. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain. Shepherds kind of live in fear of wolves, pretty much. You know, like, there's a constant enemy. But in the new creation, there's no problem. Wolves aren't going to eat the lambs. The lion's going to be eating straw. Apparently, there's going to be no more, meat eating. Someone could give me the technical word for that. Thank you. There's going to be none of that. And there's going to be complete and utter peace. Natural enemies will be at peace with one another. That sounds so odd. Pick your natural enemy. I hope you don't have a natural enemy. But if you do, picture him or her or it. And then just imagine being in perfect friendship and safety with that person or people or thing. And in the new creation, that's what it's going to be like. And dust will be the serpent's food. Do you remember back in the Garden of Eden? You had the serpent, the devil, the tempter. And God's promise that he'll be crushed. But here's the promise. In this new creation, that's going to happen. This tempter, the one who drives us towards sin, will be gone. There'll be peace between us and God because the tempter has gone. In the new creation, there's going to be a complete overhaul of everything. And I hope we see that this is a strong picture. God is going to create something perfect for his people. And in verse 18, it's going to last forever. Be glad and rejoice forever. It's going to be so great. It's going to last so long that people in it will be able to rejoice about it and over its creator forever and ever. And this is just brilliant, and I'm getting really excited, and I hope you are as well. But this promise was made to Israel 2,500, 2,800 years ago, when they were rebuilding God's city of Jerusalem. And I don't know about you, but this reality hasn't come about yet. We're clearly not living in this idyllic, perfect creation now. This is something important to remember. We cannot make this perfect world. You get people saying, all we need is world peace, or all we need is to distribute resources properly, or we need to stop war, or we need to kind of get proper governments in place, and then it's all going to be perfect. The only way it's ever going to be perfect is when God comes and does a complete overhaul of all creation. Human effort is great, but it's not going to do the job. It's only on that day where God takes the sheet off and puts a new one on and says, no more, this creation has gone. Here's the new perfect creation, where his son Jesus comes back as judge and judges everything that's gone and brings in everything that will come. And I hope I've whetted everyone's appetite enough that you really want to get into this new creation. If I haven't, then I haven't done my job properly, because you should be really, really excited. You should be really up for like getting into this new creation. I'm afraid it's not for everyone, because the new creation is for God's chosen people. And if you're a note taker, that's the second and last point. There will be a perfect new creation for God's chosen people. Here's a blunt question. How do you feel about spending an eternity with God? Does it excite you? Does it worry you? Do you think you'll be spending forever with a boring rule maker? Well, the new creation is described as somewhere where God is. In verse 18, God says, I will create Jerusalem to be a delight. And verse 19, I will rejoice over Jerusalem. Now, Jerusalem was God's city where his temple was, and God dwelt within the middle of this temple, right in the heart of his people. It was where the Ark of the Covenant was. So there's this constant, massive, huge building of a reminder to say that God is with his people here. And God is forming the new earth. And he describes it as Jerusalem. He's forming Jerusalem to be a joy. So that he's making this link between the two. There's these new heavens and this new earth, which is also Jerusalem. So this new heaven and new earth will be like Jerusalem. It's where God is. And this is why the new creation is for God's people only. Because the new creation is where God is. If someone doesn't want to live with God in charge in this creation for maybe 80 years, why on earth would you want to live in the new creation where God is among his people always, forever? In fact, this is one of the greatest comforts of the new creation. It's just how close God is with his people. Because in the toil and turmoil of this life, we can often keep God at arm's length. We kind of go through suffering and we struggle, and sometimes we kind of, God's out there. We like to keep him there because life is hard and we kind of want to get through it on our own. Or life is good and we forget about him and he's just kind of there. But in the new creation, that God is there. He is so close that before we even need to call out, he'll be right by our side. Look at verse 24. Before they call, I will answer. While they are still speaking, I will hear. Halfway through your sentence, God will be there. That's the closeness of the new creation. If you have a Bible, turn to Revelation 21, verses 1 to 5. Keep a finger in Isaiah, because we'll be going back. But I just want to read the first five verses. Just for your reference, this is a brilliant little verse to remember. It's the New Testament vision of the new creation. It's a wonderful encouragement, and it's just a beautiful set of verses. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. The old order of things has passed away." He who was seated on the throne said, "I am making everything new." Then he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." So we get to the New Testament, and the picture of the new creation is exactly the same. Intimacy, close intimacy with God, complete security, protection, as a bride which represents the church coming from God for her husband, Jesus. This is the New Testament image of the new creation, and I hope you agree, it's wonderful. Spending eternity in close intimacy with the creator and sustainer of all things. Well, we're back in Isaiah now. I hope you keep your finger there, or if not, it's page 752. But God tells us that his chosen ones will long enjoy the works of their hands. So we have this new creation where God is, where you get to enjoy intimacy with God. And now you see it's for the chosen ones. It's vitally important. Not just anyone can walk into heaven and spend eternity with God. If you think that this whole setup, this new creation, sounds brilliant, you can't just turn up at the door and say, "I want in." You have to be chosen by God. God has to pick you. Now let's stop and think, how do you really think you're getting into the new creation? It's funny, at uni, I think the phrase I've heard most when I've asked people about heaven is, "Just try not to be a bad person." That's how you get to heaven. Just try and be a good enough person, better than some people. Perhaps your views are slightly more solid than that. Keep the Ten Commandments. Pray to God every now and again. Pray to him every night. Go to church every Sunday morning. Or, you know, most Sunday mornings, barring the odd occasion. Perhaps it's something different. I'm dreadfully sorry, but we all need to hear this. Unless we are chosen by God, unless God points his finger at one of us and says, "I want you for the new creation," think like World War poster, "I want you." Unless he does that, we're not getting in. The doors are locked. Which of course begs the question, how does someone get chosen by God for the new creation? I mean, it sounds so wonderful. How on earth can I get God to let me in? How can he choose me? Well, in John chapter 14, verse 6, Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." And where is the Father? He's in the new creation. In the light of our passage, I might reword that slightly by saying, no one is chosen by God except through me, except through Jesus. The only way to get to new creation is to be chosen by God. And doesn't it make sense that Jesus, God on earth, through his atoning work on the cross, by dying for our sins, is able to get us chosen by God? If you want to get into the new creation, you have to believe that Jesus Christ puts you there by his death on the cross, dying for all the things that we have done to reject God. And by doing this, he makes sure that you are chosen by God. And by living with him as king of your life, you're basically affirming that you have a place in the new creation. And that's Christianity in a nutshell for you, basically. Last Sunday, Graham spoke about Jesus coming to earth to change our futures and our destinies. And that's the whole point of Christmas. God coming to earth in Jesus to bring him to himself. Today, I hope you've seen that if you are trusting in Jesus, that's where your future is going to lead, this perfect new creation. I really hope you've heard this and it's struck a chord. We make all kinds of New Year's resolutions, like losing weight, or being nicer, or cutting down on our carbon emissions. And I don't know about you, but I've never kept a resolution for more than 3 days, and that's on a good year. So how about instead this year, on the last Sunday of 2013, don't make a New Year's resolution, okay? Because it might not last. Instead, resolve to say, this new creation sounds so wonderful and perfect and so much better than life here. And how do I get there? Well, Jesus puts me there by dying on the cross. And if I want to get there, then I've got to say, Jesus, you did this for me, and I now want you to be king of my life so that I can get to this new creation. Doesn't that sound reasonable? Doesn't it sound good? I asked what your 2014 might be like, what your hopes or your fears for it might be. Now, Christian or non-Christian, we have no way of knowing what will be in store. But whatever hardship and suffering we might face, we can know that there is this perfect new creation waiting for us, where there is no more pain or suffering. That will all be a distant memory. It won't even be that. If you're a Christian this morning, whatever you are going through at the moment and whatever you are going to go through in the next year, rejoice. Cling to the new creation, because if you are trusting in Christ to get you there, then you will get there. And there is this perfect new creation waiting for you, that this comfort and this joy, which will be far better than anything that you might suffer on this earth. In the midst of suffering and trial, I hope that's a comfort to you. Be glad, because this new creation is wonderful, and the hope of it is certain. Whatever trial you face will not succeed in the face of this wonderful new creation. It should give us great comfort when we face evil and suffering as Christians. But also be challenged. 2014 is a big year. And there are people who don't know about this new creation, how wonderful it is, how great it is, how much better it is than here. They think it's just a boring existence in the clouds, and they'd rather give it a miss. Well, Christian, look at the new creation this morning. Say, that's so wonderful. And I want all of my friends and all of my loved ones to be there with me. And then go tell them about it. Risk an awkward conversation starter to get them there. Guaranteed, it's maybe 10 seconds of, what do you think heaven's going to be like? I don't know. What do you think it's going to be like? Bang, you're in. Slightly awkward for 5 seconds, but then you get to talk to them about Jesus, and you get to talk to them about the new creation. It's better to have that slightly awkward beginning to a conversation than to not have the conversation and have them miss out. If you get a good gift, you want to tell people about it. You want to share it with people. But this new creation is the best gift. Why would you keep it to yourself? If you're not a Christian here this morning, why not? There's this great good news. This new creation is going to be completely free from any evil or sin or death. And all you have to do to get there is to say, Jesus, you died so that my rejection of God is wiped away and I can be chosen by God for this new creation. Sounds like a good deal. If you're thinking about this, if anything has struck a chord, please talk to someone. Please talk to a Christian who brought you, someone you know, one of the elders of the church. Their mugshots are in the corridor so you can identify them. Just don't leave without talking to someone about it, because this new creation is wonderful. So we're on the cusp of a new year, but hopefully we're looking beyond that to a time where God will do away with this creation and set up his perfect new one. Christian, be encouraged. It's going to be perfect. Your sufferings here are worth it to get there. Be challenged, because you need to be chosen by God to get in. Let me tell you, nothing else is going to cut it. Being chosen by God is the only key to that door. It's going to be great. Just make sure you get there.